Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
It's January, in case you've been asleep for a really, really long time. And I guess we're still slap bang in the middle of silly season. Many people are still on holidays, possibly still hosting extended family. And we have Australia Day to go to sort of end up our couple of months full of celebrations. Now, alcohol certainly lies at the centre of many Australian celebrations. And for some, it's compulsory. Try being somebody who's not much of a drinker at a work's Christmas party. It also lies at the heart of many of society's problems. Its cultural acceptance and availability can often hide the harm that alcohol can cause. For many people, drinking any alcohol can be a problem, as it can be highly addictive. In fact, one in four in Australia has had some problem with alcohol, which is a huge amount. And you know what? Some of us don't even like it. Tonight we're going to talk about alcohol, where it sits culturally, and what it does to our bodies and minds when we drink, and what measures we can take if we want to get sober or simply cut down and reassess our relationship with booze. We're looking at alcohol through a few different lenses tonight. And joining us is Dr. Brad Mackay. He's a general practitioner with a particular experience and knowledge in alcohol and addiction. Brad, thanks very much for coming into Nightlife.
Sure.
We're also joined from Alcoholics Anonymous, Steve. Steve, thanks so much for coming
Hi,
in.
Melanie.
And we've also got Chris Rain from the organisation called Hello Sunday Morning.
I'm exhausted already.
Me too. So Hello Sunday Morning, which we'll hear more about in a second, moves us towards a better drinking culture. Chris, welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me.
Now let's start with El Doctoro, Brad Mackay. Just what are the stats around alcohol use in Australia? Are we big drinkers compared with other countries, Brad?
We're one of the biggest boozers in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So across the board, we drink more than Americans. I think we're pretty close to the UK and the amount of alcohol that we drink per person. And we see so many problems with alcohol all throughout society. So as you're saying, like about one in four people, so a quarter of Australians will have a problem with risky drinking at some stage. But even, yeah, like three quarters of Australians will be drinking at some stage or drink regularly.
Now, I've heard it be said that for younger people, they're reducing their alcohol consumption.
And my God, they're becoming so boring. those millennials.
Well, then,
young people these days.
What do you think? Do you think in 20 years' time, alcohol is going to be looked through the lens like we look at smoking now?
Well, look, hopefully that will be the case. So, yeah, it is really, really promising that we are noticing a decrease in alcohol. So it's also kids are less likely to get together in groups like they did back in the 90s when I was a teenager growing up.
We all just felt our spew drink then, didn't we, when you said that? Goodness, yeah.
So, often people are on their computers, they're using apps, they're communicating online, and they're not really meeting up together in social groups and, having tinnies down the back of the garage like the bad old days, the early 90s. Yeah. Oh, my God. So that's really promising. But we're also getting more health messages out there as well. So just like smoking saying, yep, it's terrible, it causes cancer, the second biggest cause of cancer is alcohol. And we really don't hear that. We're not really speaking about that. But anything from liver cancer, well, like we all remember that alcohol affects your liver, but over time it does increase your risk of getting liver cancer, as well as cancer in your esophagus, head and neck, throat cancers, as you're getting increased inflammation and irritation of those tissues. Cancers all over the body as well. So not as much as smoking, but still this is a reality for many, many people.
What does alcohol do physiologically to your body when you take a drink?
Well, off the top of my head, so as you're taking a drink, what does it do physically? So it gets absorbed into your bloodstream, the ethanol. Starts to inhibit certain parts of your brain that are involved with judgment and even balance. So we become klutzes and drop lots of things, including our glass. We're much more likely to fall over, have head injuries. I've had friends falling down staircases and having terrible injuries. So all of that is impaired. The alcohol builds up in your bloodstream and your liver can only metabolize a certain amount of alcohol, basically two standard drinks in the first hour and then one standard drink every hour after that. Mm-hmm. So if you're having more than three standard drinks over a 2-hour period, which doesn't give you much. It's about a stubby and a bit of beer. Then that will sort of like start to tip over. You'll get lots of toxic ethanol building up in your system, and then that can have all sorts of problems on your brain, on your liver, and other organs.
What's the addictive part of alcohol? Is it this ethanol that you're talking about?
So the ethanol that floats around into the brain actually helps out with GABA. So gamma amino butyl. I always forget the word.
Let's
just call it GABA.
Science.
It's late at night.
GABA. So, it's the GABA.
GABA receptors helps to keep them open, which then inhibits different parts of the brain. And so it sort of like works synchronously with that. It also increases the dopamine part or increases the amount of dopamine in your brain as well. And people talk about that being like the reward center, but describing it being the center that makes you do the same thing. So it's sort of a bit of a reward, but it keeps you wanting to go back to that previous behavior.
How do we know scientifically why some people can have a single drink and leave it and some people cannot? They have to keep going after they have one.
Yeah, it's a big question. What we anticipate at the moment is that there's probably going to be the alcoholic gene or a whole range of different genes that make you more likely to be predisposed to alcoholism and keep on going back to it. We tend to find that that people have lots more alcohol if they have a Celtic background, so Scandinavian, Scottish, Irish.
They're more likely to consume more alcohol or be alcoholics?
More likely to be a little bit of both.
Right.
So, yeah. So I've got friends who have Irish ancestry and they might feel a little bit tired and they're about to fall asleep and then they'll have a beer and then they're up and they're on fire and they're singing and everything gets switched on in their brain. And so they're much more likely with one drink that opens the floodgates and they're much more likely to have 20 drinks in that one sitting. Whereas somebody else with a different genetic background or different environment, upbringing, all of these sort of things can have just one drink and just sit on it for a while and they're not really craving to keep on opening the gates and drink 20 drinks.
How does the medical profession classify whether somebody's an alcoholic or not?
There's all sorts of different ways that we do talk about alcoholism. So as according to their DSM-5 criteria, so the psychiatric Bible, we talk about like having a range of different symptoms. So frequently drinking more than you intend to when you're going out, having an increased tolerance to alcohol, so you need more alcohol to get the same effect. If you have attempted multiple times and have been unsuccessful in cutting down or stopping, if you keep on getting cravings for it, if you're missing your obligations due to drinking, if you're not turning up to work, for example, and particularly if you're continuing to drink despite negative consequences. So, if you know that it's bad for you, but you keep on doing it, that's one of the big triggers for saying, yep, this is an addiction.
Steve, let's bring you in now because you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is probably the most well-known way of combating alcoholism. How does AA define an alcoholic?
I don't know that we really define it. There's a lot of things we'd say to people, you know, is alcohol costing you more than money? And most alcoholics will go, but there is a list of 20 questions put out by, a long time ago, by Johns Hopkins University. And most alcoholics will go through those 20 questions and say yes to 17, 18, 19 at least of them, and then read at the bottom that if you answered yes to one of these, you may have trouble with alcohol. If you answered yes to two or more, you're definitely an alcoholic. They go, oh, I answered 17. So it's those things that Brad mentioned of, problems with work, problems with family, all of that, yeah.
And let's bring Chris in now too from Hello Sunday Morning. Chris, am I correct in saying that you don't use as definitive terms as alcoholic or not in Hello Sunday Morning?
Yeah, we're really focused on helping individuals change in whatever way they want to change. So if for some people that label is really important, and particularly in AA, it's a really important label, I think, for people to achieve sobriety for a long period of time. But for others, it's not as important. We cater to the wider market.
Brad, let's see with you. So if somebody presents to you and they think they've got a problem with alcohol, what are the sort of questions that you ask, and where do you sort of start on the path to treatment?
The simplest questionnaire that doctors use is called the CAGE questionnaire. So CAGE, standing for different questions. So the C stands for, have you ever felt you've needed to cut down on drinking alcohol? A, I love this question. Have you ever felt annoyed? A for annoyed, that somebody's told you that maybe you should be cutting down. G, have you ever felt guilty about your drinking? And E, have you ever felt that you've needed an early morning drink or an eye opener? To steady your nerves or to get rid of a hangover in the morning. And I used to work in Ireland, and the pubs used to open at about 6 a.m. so you could have a drink on the way to your
Crikey.
Building site.
Yeah. Crikey.
So,
I mean, what hope have you got, actually, if you can go to a pub at 6 a.m. in the morning?
Well, when you have pubs called eye-opener pubs in Ireland, Jeez. That's not a great system.
Oh, my goodness. You're on ABC. I sounded like a real wowser then. I shouldn't have. Sorry about that. If you've just tuned in, I'm Melanie Tate, filling in for Phil Clark tonight on The Nightlife. We're talking about alcohol and alcoholism, the issues we have with it in our society, and some of the ways that if you've got a bit of a problematic relationship with alcohol, that you can find help, you can find fellowship, you can find medical help, all those sorts of things we're going to be talking about. Let's look at some of the non-medical alternatives now for problem drinkers. And Steve, when was Alcoholics Anonymous formed?
Back in 1935 in the US.
Mm-hmm. And how so? How did the organisation start?
It was one fellow who, he was a stockbroker who had a horrendous story of drinking and failure, and his marriage was breaking up, and had to be hospitalised quite a few times, and eventually had a sort of what some people would call a religious realisation that he had to stop drinking, and he knew he had to get other people involved with it, helping other people. And so he went to a surgeon who was a famous drunk in the town, and together they formed AA. And from there, the whole spirit of it is telling other people what they can do, not talking anyone into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to drink, that's your business.
Yep.
If you want to stop, then perhaps we can help. So AA is not a temperance association. It's just wants to help people who want to stop drinking.
So the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous are the 12 steps. What exactly are the 12 steps? How do they work?
It's a series of things you do, like admit you're powerless over alcohol, admit that human power can't help you. You need a power greater than yourselves, which back in the 1930s in the US was very much, they didn't say Christian, mm-hmm. but it was very much a Christian thing. Here it's much less like that. I'm an atheist and don't have any trouble with the AA's idea of God or mm-hmm. a higher power. And there's lots of Christians in AA, but I only know two AA members who are regular churchgoers.
Right.
So it's not a religious, it's a spiritual organisation, mm-hmm. but certainly nothing to do with religion.
So if somebody was to decide that they wanted to stop drinking, how does it work going, you know, saying, right, I want to join AA? What are the steps that you need to take, or how does it work? How does a meeting work?
Right. Go to the website and you'll find in Sydney there's 400 meetings each
400?
Week. 400?
Yeah. Crikey.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Wow.
and you just turn up at a meeting someone will hopefully take you under their wing. There's nothing intrusive. Nobody asks you, you know, what's your name, where do you live, nothing like that. Just come in, welcome, how can we help you? And it's really odd, you know, you go along to an AA meeting, you think, well, where's the therapy? You know, I want some injections, I want some pills, I want perhaps neurosurgery, something serious. And you give me this 12 steps hanging on the wall, of their spiritual exercises.
The talk about God too, that can be really scary for people.
Which I didn't like one bit, but I don't have a problem with it. Some people think of a Christian God, some of a Hindu God, I don't know. But for me it's the way the world works, the sort of Taoist idea of a power greater than yourself.
You've been in the rooms of AA for many years. What kind of recovery have you seen people have inside it?
Oh, tremendous. I mean, some of the worst people I've known. I mean, there was one guy, he was a bikie. He was thrown out of one bikie gang, joined another. They couldn't put up with him. They threw him out. He was a hideous person, cruel, violent, dreadful man. Got sober in AA and just became the most kind, gentle person who opened a little business, helped other people. He was just a fabulous person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being this hideous character, you get these enormous changes.
You get a sponsor in AA. What's a sponsor?
Probably nowadays you'd call it a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who'll just show you the ropes, take you to a few meetings, introduce you around and explain what the steps are, because they're quite puzzling at first. And, yeah, so a sponsor's a good thing to have.
So, and Steve, why anonymity? Why is it Alcoholics Anonymous and why is that anonymity important?
Well, to anybody coming in, it's very important that nobody knows, you know. I was terrible. The first AA meeting I went to was 20 miles from where I lived. Even though there was one, you know, 10 minutes away, I didn't want anyone to know, even though everybody who knew me knew I was a drunk. But the real important thing is anonymity at the level of press, radio and films, mass media, because we don't want anyone standing up and being Mr. AA and telling people how to do it. And, you know, AA is this wonderful anonymous organisation where everybody's equal. There's no experts. There's just members who are alcoholics themselves and have recovered.
Which is why we're not using your surname or anything like that tonight. Let's move now to Hello Sunday Morning. And we're joined from Hello Sunday Morning by the founder, Chris Rain. Chris, tell me about Hello Sunday Morning.
Sure. So we were established 10 years ago and our focus is really about supporting people that are really motivated to change their relationship with alcohol, whether they...
Before we talk about the treatment or the solution that Hello Sunday Morning offers, how did this organisation get started?
When I was 22, I decided that I wanted to take a year off drinking. I was working in nightclubs and in advertising and I thought that was would be a really interesting social experiment and a way to get healthy. And then I wrote a weekly blog about the experience. At the time, blogging was a really new phenomenon. It was a way of journaling it publicly. And then lots of people wrote in and said, this is something that we're interested in doing too. And then over the last decade, it's really evolved. Originally, it was much more focused on public health and reaching young people and supporting young people to change and providing events and things like that for them. But over the years, the membership has significantly shifted largely towards more women in their 40s and 50s with jobs and kids and are drinking quite excessively but don't have access to existing treatment or feel like existing treatment's right for them. So it's a much different population. So it's really changed over the years into something that's fascinating.
And how might somebody who, I mean, do you join Hello Sunday Morning or do you subscribe? How does it work?
Yeah, so our main, you can sign up to hellosundaymorning.org and join the community that way. We have a main program called Daybreak, which you can download as an app. And on there, you'll be just like in AA, there's a community of people that can support you through the challenge. They're going through the same thing and that's curated according to your data and what's more likely to support you. And then you can also talk to a drug and alcohol counsellor or a psychologist if necessary. And then there's a lot of advice and information and strategies and things like that that have been built by psychologists to support people. So it's pretty simple. It's freely available in Australia, thanks to the Australian government, for 7,000 people a year. So that's how you get involved.
So where AA is about abstinence from alcohol, am I correct in assuming that Hello Sunday Morning is about moderation more than abstinence?
No, we're more about individual choice.
Right.
So, you know, something in the vicinity of 80% of our membership will take extended breaks from drinking or quit, and that will be their goal. But there's still a small percentage of people that want to cut back or take a little break or whatever it is that's right for them.
Right. And what sort of recovery or what sort of if recovery is kind of probably AA speak, what kind of what have you seen happen to people over the years that you've been involved with Hello Sunday Morning?
Yeah, we've done a number of studies and with Monash University and now with NIDRI, the National Drug Research Institute, and it's showing, it's indicating that people are likely to change when they, if they can stick at it for a significant period of time. Our goal now is to do a randomized control trial on our program and see whether it be as effective or different kind of effectiveness to different populations than what would access residential treatment. So we're seeing some great outcomes. And then obviously if you sign up and you get the qualitative experiences of people that go through a process of change, particularly our demographic, it's a really, which is women in their 40s that have extraordinary pressures on them and they're using alcohol to relieve that, and they find this community of people that need support that can provide that to them. It's, you know, quite amazing. You can see that on your phone. There's thousands of stories every day.
Isn't that interesting? Women in their 40s, that's your big market kind of thing.
Yeah.
Brad, let's bring you back into the conversation now. If somebody comes to you and they tick all the boxes having a problem with alcohol, what's the medical treatment for combating that problem?
Well, everybody is very unique in what they're needing and everybody's journey is very different. So part of my job as a GP is to sort of go, okay, well, what's the best step? Where are you at? What do you need? What's going to be the most valuable for that individual person? So, and I suppose that's one of the big things out of tonight is to say that there's not one thing that fits all people. So I do see a number of different people presenting with all sorts of different situations. I suppose it's great to have like two very different opinions from different different points of view. So I have many patients who have a religious or a spiritual tendency, and so they may be very much in tune with AA. I've got many gay patients who love going to gay AA. So there's gay AA in the Rainbow Room. that's a great, and it's a great support for a lot of people, men and women. And then there are a lot of patients who are atheistic, who don't believe in that higher power. They're sort of like, okay, well, what I see is what I get, and there's the reality of what we're going through together in as society. And so, yeah, it's great to have other organisations as well, like Hello Sunday Morning, that can sort of like meet people where they are. So I often talk about smart recovery as well, so self-management and recovery training. So there's lots of smart programs and smart meetings that are around Australia. So that started in Australia in about 2003, and that's been escalating as well in the numbers of people that go and have a little bit more of a psychological basis, or CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, motivational interviewing, sort of like evidence-based medicine, what I tend to love, at helping people through getting through their days, giving them strategies to not drink alcohol.
So we have got so many callers. We've got Jane on the line. Hello, Jane.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Thanks for waiting on. Well, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Bizarre. I got in the car after leaving an AA meeting.
One of the... right. Fantastic.
And it's just so refreshing to hear the alcoholism come out and be discussed freely. And it's incredible to think that 37, I was just in the grips of alcoholism, and I cannot tell you the compulsion is just horrific, and you wake up with that guilt, shame and remorse, saying you're never doing it again. By 11 o'clock, I was thinking, and how am I going to get to Dan Murphy's to get my next lot? Even if my daughter had poured it down the sink. I was just furious with her. Absolutely disgusted. How could she possibly do that to me? And, yes, look, I'm just gobsmacked that it's just wonderful to talk about it, mm-hmm. listen to it on the radio.
Jane, how did you find AA?
Well, it was by coincidence that a friend of mine, an acquaintance, had given up. And I thought, that's strange. She's a bit like me. She's a big drinker. I was never alcoholic, of course, just a big drinker.
Of course.
And then she said, I'll take you to a meeting. And she said, do not let the God part upset you or put you off. And somebody said, just keep coming back. And I wish I had have found it earlier, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't have any regrets over that.
Mm-hmm.
And I am now showing my family. I can tell them I won't drink, but I'm actually showing them that I'm not drinking. And I'm very involved with AA. I do a lot of work on the helplines, overnight lines. And it truly is a marvellous fellowship. It's a fellowship. And every person you sit next to wants the best for you to succeed. There's nobody that doesn't want you not to succeed, mm-hmm. which is lovely.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, Jane, thanks for coming in and thanks for calling in and sharing that.
Oh, no, and I look forward to listening to the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And let's go to Barbara now. Hello, Barbara.
Oh, hi. And Melanie, I think I've responded to your comments even rather than the other people, as a person who's not drinking any alcohol anymore,
mm-hmm.
And for no special reason, like I didn't have to give it up or battle or
right.
take any particular point of view. But what happened in my life was I did a lot of drinking as a young person, mm-hmm. which was pretty normal for everybody, and I settled down a bit and had some kids and sort of moderated everything, mm-hmm. realising you can't really raise children and be out at night drinking. A family member, however, was drinking and did decide and went to AA and gave it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that. I actually went to an AA meeting myself and I was just blown away by the power of it. I think it's a fantastic program, although I didn't attend it myself. But that's my comment about AA. I think it's fantastic. As a consequence of that in the family, we had a decision not to have alcohol in the house to support mm-hmm. the person.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed very fair and reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And I drank socially a little bit and over the years slowly stopped. And I don't think I've had an alcoholic drink for about 10 years. My comment now is that that's nothing for me. So I was thinking, like, when you are with people, it's the drinkers that comment on you, not me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a point of view about it. I am a person who doesn't drink alcohol, and I don't have any big stick to wave about it or anything like that.
Well, Barbara, and you and I should go out one night together.
Yeah. Well, that's what it strikes me that, unlike a lot of other things that you mightn't do, and I said to your producer, like, if you don't eat avocados, nobody says anything
no one cares.
To you about that. But, and I don't even go, I don't drink. You just like, don't drink something, and other people notice it, and then they sort of want to know why.
Mm.
And it's a funny position to be in society. So coming from that side, really,
well,
it's just a comment, really.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Barbara. Thanks
cool.
so much.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
And let's go to Johnny now. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, guys. How are you going?
Well, thanks. How are you?
My name's John. I'm an alcoholic and I'm a member of the fellowship. I'm glad to be sober today.
Terrific. What took you into AA?
Oh, I had a serious problem. I first found AA in about 1988. I stopped drinking, did 30 meetings in 30 days all around Sydney. You know, they're talking about 400 meetings in Sydney. It was just awesome. And had a little bust in about 94, but ran straight back to AA when I woke up one morning and could not remember what happened the night before.
So you've been in
but
since?
It's an interesting concept. The higher power, I heard a chappie, his name was Broken Hill Bob, a fabulous speaker, and his higher power happened to be the South Melbourne tram. and his logic was that the tram could go past the pub. I can't.
Wow, that's interesting, isn't it?
You know, that whole concept is an individual thing. And it works. AA works. It saved my life.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for calling, Johnny.
It's a pleasure.
Have a good night. Now, I've just had a text that's come through. You know, we've had a lot of calls that are very, you know, pro-AA. I've had a text that I'm not sure who this is from, but saying only 8 to 10% of people stay sober in AA. This fellowship was a cult for me. This is from Lucas in Darlinghurst. I was under its spell for 23 years. I've now successfully drunk alcohol for 5 years like an adult, he says. I might get Brad to respond to that, and also Steve. Brad?
Yeah, so we find that if we're looking scientifically at AA, there's a lot of criticism about the model. So as you were saying earlier on, Steve, like it was created back in 1935, and I think the book originally came out in 1939, and there wasn't really much evidence behind it. It was just sort of like chatting and deciding what would be these 12 steps that people would go down. So I think AA itself does self-select. So if you go and you don't like it, if you don't like people talking about God, if you don't like the 12 steps, you won't keep on going. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of people will sort of like fall away from the flock, so to speak. Scientifically, we talk about sort of like 5 to 10% being successful in AA, but this is all still debatable.
Because it's anonymous, so it'd be conjecture, because I would imagine it'd be difficult to do a scientific study.
Yes. Yeah. Impossible.
Right. Can you move a bit closer to your mic? No. Thanks, Steve.
So inherently being anonymous can make it difficult if you're trying to do a scientific research study on it. So some people do hate it, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Some people love going to one group and they hate all the other groups. And I will often encourage people to go and try different groups out, go to different meetings, whatever media it is, find your people, like people that you relate with, people that you get along with, and a community that can actually support you through a very, very difficult time of your life. And I think that's what it really comes down to, finding that community, finding the support, having a GP, having a drug and alcohol counsellor or a psychologist, having your family on board. All of these things we know are really helpful in getting people through a really difficult time and to decrease or stop drinking, depending on what your desire is.
We've got GP Dr. Brad Mackay with us, Chris Rain from Hello Sunday Morning, and Steve from Alcoholics Anonymous. Before we'll go to your calls in just a moment, but I just want to ask one other thing. Isn't there some sort of a pill you can take to, you know, be grossed out by alcohol, Brad?
There are many different pills you can take. So the three main ones we talk about, everyone hears about antabuse or disulfiram, which is the medication that you take, and if you drink alcohol, you chuck your guts up. So I really don't advocate for that. It's really not useful in most avenues. I find if I'm just prescribing it to somebody and they're in charge of the medication, they'll often not take it if they're wanting to have a drink.
Yeah, right.
So we often these days either have a relative who's feeding it to you every morning or night, or you have to go into a clinic and have it supervised to make sure that you're having the tablet. Mm-hmm. But it's quite heavy-handed. There's another medication called naltrexone as well, which helps to stop getting the buzz from alcohol. So if you're having a drink and you've had that medication, it really stops you from feeling that joy that people get from alcohol. They just taste it as a bitter drink, and it's not very enjoyable if you're tasting a bitter drink and not getting any fun bit from it. And so it's a way for people to separate alcohol from that enjoyment and that reward. There's also another drug called acamprosate as well, which also has a lot of evidence to stop people from drinking or reduce drinking. I usually say that you're too busy taking tablets to think about alcohol because it's usually about three tablets, three or four times a day.
Oh, goodness.
So it's always an your mind. You've always got a pocket full of tablets. So I think distraction is often how it works from alcohol.
I've had a great question come through on text, and we might start with you on this, Chris Rain. Do you have any advice for family members of alcoholics? Can they do anything to help if the person with the problem isn't ready to deal with it?
Yeah, this is an area that we've been really researching into with Vic Health, and looking at how family members can most effectively bring the conversation up and be supportive for people to get care. Mm-hmm. One of the real challenges we've found is that often if you have someone that has a problem with alcohol in the family, they've tried several times to either quit or cut back and said it several times, and there's this great guilt and dysfunction in that conversation. So there's resources that we provide on our website, but probably, as Brad was saying, the best way to start is to get a team of professional support around you, talk to a psychologist, talk to a drug and alcohol worker, and talk with people that have helped other families talk through this challenge with them, rather than just sort of firing from the hip on all occasions. So it's a really hard thing to do, and ultimately it comes from a place of love and wanting, you know, the person you love to live a healthy, successful life. But often the efforts that we take can drive the problem even further.
Steve, does Alcoholics Anonymous have a way of helping family?
No, AA doesn't, but there's a parallel organisation called Al-Anon, which is for the friends and family of alcoholics. It's very, very successful. It really does help. Yes, but it's quite separate to AA. AA never aligns itself with any other organisation.
Let's go to Annette from Ballarat, who's on the line. Hi, Annette.
Hi, Melanie. Hi, everyone. How are you all?
Everybody's very well. What would you like to talk about tonight, Annette?
When I was young, Melanie, my grandparents had a bar in their house because it's a two-story, and they took me down to the bar, and there were all of these drinks in front of them, like cranes and months and everything, and they said, what we'd like to do is introduce you to drinks here. And if you get older and you want to have a drink, that's fine, but we'd like you to try it here. And if you feel like it, you're welcome to, but if you don't, you don't have to drink it.
And this is when you were 12? So you just didn't, because it was in front of you, you didn't care about it?
My favourite was Masala and Coke, but then later on I said, I really don't feel like drinking when I'm older.
Oh, well, that's...
Now I can have one or leave it and I'm a happy drunk, but... Yeah, other than that, I don't really want it. If I don't want it, I don't drink it.
Oh, good on you. Annette, thanks for calling in. Have a good night. Let's go to Steve from the Central Coast. Hello, Steve.
G'day, how are we going?
Well, thanks. How are you going?
Could be better.
Right.
I'm still suffering from being an alcoholic. Like, I'm ex-military and find a lot of the guys that I've been through the military with, most their drinking habits stem from, like, their post-traumatic stress. So it's kind of like a multifaceted addiction, if you know what I mean.
Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, and like the doctor was saying before, like, I've surrounded myself with, I've got a psychiatrist and a psychologist, and and I'm on medication trying to... get off, but then there are other alternatives. You can check yourself into a private clinic, and that can dry you out if you do have issues with alcohol.
And have you tried that, Steve?
Yeah, I've been in and out of rehab for the last couple of years, but at my worst, I was drinking about 50 to 60 standard drinks a day.
Right, right. Oh, that's tough. And how are you doing at the moment? You sound pretty good at the moment.
Well, I've just come out of rehab not only a few weeks ago. The drinking hasn't completely stopped, but I'm at least able to have a couple of days off in between.
That's great. Steve, you take care of yourself, and thank you for calling and sharing that.
Okay, no worries.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.
I mean, Steve's a common story that you hear, Brad.
Yeah, all the time. And one of the problems is that post-traumatic stress disorder is really hard to treat. So we can have lots of counselling, we can have psychiatrists, we can have medication. But it's a really tricky medical issue, and we're still looking for something that can help and help people to get over the trauma that they've experienced previously. So with Steve, seeing a psychiatrist and having some support, that's fantastic. A lot of people will just self-medicate with alcohol, which doesn't get them very far. My heart really goes out for Steve. Like, he's doing all the right things, he's seeing all the right people, but still having a problem.
Is it similar to, you know, there's those great ads on television about smoking, Brad, that say, you know, this person has tried 27 times, on the 28th time it works, you know, you just got to keep trying. Is it similar with alcohol?
I've got many patients who have been a chronic alcoholic for years, and they quit 10 years ago, and they're alive today because they finally had that final drink. If they keep on drinking, yes, they will die. So people do often get to crisis point. I've had patients that have been on the liver transplant list because they've been drinking their liver to oblivion, and it's only once they're actually like sitting there in a clinic going, oh my God, I could actually be facing a transplant of an organ and taking a healthy organ from somebody much younger and wiser than me, that actually wakes them up and they decide, oh, I need to do something about this.
Do things change as we get older? Like, I remember some of my grandparents, they loved booze, and as they got older stopped drinking, and I don't think it was any great sort of, I think they just didn't feel like it anymore. Does that happen at all?
Yeah, people go through different phases. We were talking earlier on about having kids, and what we find in Australia across the board as population studies is that people tend to drink a little bit more in their 20s. When they get kids, alcohol starts to drop off a little bit. And then when they're getting older and their kids are leaving house.
And disappointing them.
And disappointing them and probably not able to leave the house for a long time because they can't afford rent or properties. Then when they finally leave, then the parents start to drink, and we're finding that a lot more people in their 50s and 60s are having more alcohol and even smoking a little bit more cannabis as they're getting older as well. So that's on the rise too.
Wow. Well, let's go to Mark from Warrnambool. Hi, Mark.
Good evening.
Mark.
I want to start by saying I love the slogan, Hello Sunday Morning. I think that is very clever, and it just sums it right up about being sober, I think.
So what's your story, Mark?
I gave up drinking and drugs about 7 years ago. I was a binge drinker and into the party scene. And walked into a AA meeting. I often say the hardest step I ever took was that first one walking through the door. But I've stopped drinking, and I found I'm a single man of 46 years of age now, and find people's reactions interesting, as you were saying earlier, about not drinking, but they've gone from being an unhealthy human being to now running marathons and half marathons,
great.
And finding extremely encouraging, supporting people within these sort of groups. You know, there's so many different people out there that don't drink that we sometimes look past them and just see the ugly side of alcohol. And, you know, finding groups out there that are sporting related is not only great for your mental health, but also just a really good way of connecting with people. And it doesn't always have to be over drinks. And I'm finding now I'd never miss it. I actually really enjoy life being sober. And I was one of those hopeless cases and never thought it could ever happen. And don't know my exact sobriety date because I didn't think I'd get past day one.
Good on you.
On groups like Sober in the Country and that sort of thing on Facebook, which are really encouraging groups to look at. So there's plenty of things that people think about being sober that can still be social, still be happy, live much happier.
Oh, well, thanks so much for sharing that, Mark, and well done, or congratulations. You're not meant to say well done in AA, are you?
Well, you can.
But
somebody said to me, it's like congratulating for somebody for stopping banging their head against the wall.
Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye. And Mikhail, hello to you tonight.
How are you, ma'am? How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Thank you very much. I guess I want to make my comments. I'm very deeply Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the Church of the East, Assyrian Church of the East.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol to me doesn't bother me. I drink as much as I want because my value of Christianism has an impact in my mind to not hurt people.
Right.
So even I'm drunk, I will never hurt people. The alcohol, he cannot penetrate between my thought and my pleasure of drinking. So who is those people being affected about alcohol? Those people has no civilizations. Those people has no values of Christianism. They affect on them because they think they are free of soul to hurt people or to talk about people. The alcohol affect their brain. But me, as an alcoholic, I love drink. I'm telling you, on the New Year Eve, I drink one bottle and about three glasses of scotch.
Mm-hmm.
I come home and I celebrate myself, and I called all my sisters in America. I called all my cousins in Europe. I put in my head on a pillow, and then start alcohol working on me, right. And I slept in peace.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Mikhail. You take care of yourself. Good night. Bye-bye. And let's go to, did you want to say something, Brad?
I was just going to say that it sounds like Mikhail's one of the loving drunks.
Yeah.
We often classify people as either being loving, where they're calling all their relatives, or mm-hmm. they can be the angry drunk, mm-hmm. or the violent drunk, or mm-hmm. the crying in the corner drunk. So, yeah, everyone tends to go into different directions.
Right.
So Mikhail's one of those lucky, lovey drunk people.
Lucky. Right. Well, let's go to Russell now. Hello, Russell.
How are you going?
Well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very, very well. And I've been an alcoholic since I was about 20.
Mm-hmm.
But I started drinking when I was about 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never affected my life in the least.
Oh, it hasn't?
No. I rose to the top of my profession.
Mm-hmm.
I've owned my own homes. I've supplied my daughters with their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got three beautiful grandchildren and I'm still an alcoholic.
And your relationships are all intact and good?
My wife and I have been together for 50 years.
Well, that's brilliant. That is just brilliant, Russell. Thank you so much for sharing that other side of what we're talking about.
Affected my wife. Knows. Well, she she's not a big drinker, but she knows I'm an alcoholic and it's never really affected our relationship.
Oh, well, that's great, Russell. Thanks so much for calling in.
No worries. Bye.
Thank you. I guess if we could sum up our conversation tonight, what would the way forward, would you recommend anybody who has been listening tonight and thinks that they, because we had another text from somebody who says, you know, that they can drink wine, red wine, and it makes them very happy. Well, we're not really aiming this conversation at somebody who enjoys their wine and it makes them happy. We're really aiming this conversation at people who know they have a problem with it, aren't we? What would be the kind of the parting words you would leave somebody who has an issue with alcohol? We might start with you, Steve.
Look, I'd recommend anybody who's feeling they want to stop and can't, go to the website aa.org.au, look it up in the phone book, find a meeting, come along and try it out.
Great. Thank you so much. And what about you?
I've just loved the diversity of relationships with alcohol, I think, and the ability for us to talk about it. I mean, and the particular caller, Steve, I think he's really right in the middle of a real challenge in his life, and for him to have the courage and the confidence to be able to call up and share that story, I think that for me was really inspiring. I feel really inspired by that.
Thanks, Chris. Brad?
I would encourage everybody to look at the advertising that's everywhere for alcohol, because Australia has a major problem with drinking. We're needing to decrease it. It's causing so many problems in society. And if you are having a problem, then certainly see your GP and look at all sorts of different groups, whether it's Hello Sunday Morning or if it's AA or if it's Smart Recovery. Find what suits you and keep on going.
Dr. Brad Mackay, GP, Chris Rain from Hello Sunday Morning, and Steve from Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for joining us on Nightlife tonight.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.